It's my great pleasure to welcome to the DEC a man who has served our state and our city so well as governor for a vital 8-year period in this state's history, and someone that I'm proud to call a good friend, Governor Rick Snyder.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, please be seated. Thank you. Well, thank you for that warm welcome. Jerry, thanks for those incredible words. I really do appreciate it. Steve, thank you for what the Detroit Economic Club does. It's one of the great assets and institutions that's a living thing that we have in our state. So it's critically important. It's great to have an opportunity to be with you. It was interesting. It was described sort of as a way to get my thoughts. It was given to me as an exit interview. So this is, as I'm going out the door, this is my exit interview. To be open with you, it's a lot easier than my entry interview, which was running for office. So this is a piece of cake from my perspective, but it's a great opportunity to share with you because this is about what we've done together. I'm only gonna make 2 or 3 comments on a couple topics. And then I really do want to do the Q&A, because that's the fun part. If you step back and look at it, though, you can look at a lot of numbers, economic statistics. Michigan has gone from 50 out of 50 to now being a top 10 state again. And we should be proud of that. But more than that, when I became governor in the 2010 census, we were the only state in the nation that actually shrank. We lost population. Our young people were leaving the state in droves. Many of us knew a lot of those kids. In many cases, they could have been our sons and daughters or nieces and nephews. They didn't have an opportunity in the state, and so they simply left. And so, what do you do about that? Well, first of all, you have to understand how we got there. And to be open with you, there are a lot of external economic reasons people could look at and stuff like that. But the main reason we had the lost decade, which was different than having a huge recession for the rest of the country, was us. We had been too successful. We were fortunate. Many of us grew up in an age where we were the model for the rest of the world. The American middle class was created in Michigan. The modern corporation was created in Michigan. And we had a great thing going, and we wrote it in the ground. We didn't look to the rest of the world, and we didn't understand the world was changing. We tried doing the same thing, and it didn't work. So part of my philosophy when I looked at it was not looking as a politician. It wasn't about fixing Michigan. It was about reinventing Michigan and bringing back that spirit of innovation, entrepreneurship, that passion that made us so great to begin with. It wasn't gone, folks. We had just forgotten it. We need to reestablish it, and that's what we've been doing the last few years, is bringing that old spirit back. Because when you have that spirit of innovation, when you have that spirit of collaboration, of working together, you can do anything. The greatest limitation that you face in that consequence is what you put in your own mind to say you can't do. It was to get rid of those barriers. Because if you go back to the illustration of Detroit, I am really proud of what's happened here. If you remember when I was talking about putting Detroit in bankruptcy, how many of you honestly thought you could see Detroit being where it's at today versus believing worse days were still to come? It proved when we said we could do something many people thought was impossible, and we did it. It showed we can do that, and we can do it not just in Detroit, we can do it over and over again. About unleashing the power of Michiganders positively and collectively. And so we are in this process of reinventing our state, and we need to keep it up. I tell people that one of the key things that distinguishes what we've done from some of the other things you see around the country is we're too much in a divided world in our country today. The main topic I would share with you is my greatest concern for our nation is us, not as Michiganders, but as Americans. The greatest threat to our country is our lack of civility between one another. We have to worry about North Korea, we have to worry about Iran, we have other big issues out there. But just look at our national scene. Is it right? It's not. But too often we act like it is okay. And it's only getting worse. In Michigan, we should be proud. Have we always been positive on every topic? No, but largely it's been about how we work together and think about the things we've solved. Detroit, we did things like Healthy Michigan to give health care to nearly 700,000 Michiganders that didn't have it before. There are many people alive today that wouldn't be alive but for the fact we came together and did those things. We should be proud of that. And we should be using that model. And I appreciate Jerry using my phrase, relentless positive action. What does that mean? It means who cares about credit? Who cares about blame? Who cares about, it's not who's on the other side and why you should insult them or call them a name or anything else. What's the problem we're there to solve? This isn't rocket science. Let's look at what the real problem is. And even if we have different perspectives, let's gather together to solve it. In fact, if you think about it, to solve the toughest problems, isn't it good to have diversity of opinion versus just one opinion? It's actually a positive power when you harness it and use it the right way. And that's where I'm proud to say we're a very diverse state. You bring those ideas together to say not what we differ on, but what we agree on, and you simply do it. And what you find is after you've done it once, the next time you come back to look at that issue again, you're that much closer and it'll be easier to solve the next part of the problem. So relentless positive action is a message I would share with you that I hope we embrace and continue, particularly in this national environment of terrible lack of civility. This is our opportunity. I'm proud of what we've done over the last 8 years. We have built a foundation for the future. The challenge now as Michiganders is can't we take that foundation and do it for our kids and generations not even born yet to continue on that path, but also show the rest of our nation and the world we know how to solve problems together. We can be that role model. I always get laughed at when I give the illustration, and you might get a kick out of this. I am a proud nerd, I am an accountant, but I talk about when I do the budget. The illustration I'd give you is when I do the budget, I pretend I'm sitting at the family kitchen table. Seriously. And I tell people, I've got 10 million people sitting at my kitchen table. See, people laugh, it's a normal thing. That's a big table, folks. But think about it in your family. Do you agree with everyone, all your other family members on all issues? Anybody got a family like that? The question is when you're sitting at that Thanksgiving table, that holiday table with those other family members, and those issues come up that you don't agree, how do you disagree? Do you call them names? Do you stand up and hold up a poster to show the rest of the family how terrible this person is? You don't. Isn't that how we should treat one another when we're not just sitting with our family, but every individual in our country? People deserve that same level of respect whether you're related to them or not. That's how I've tried to lead Michigan. That's the Michigan we need to continue on. Because when you do that, it's a whole different story. Your ability to get things done, your ability to make huge change, to innovate, and to make a better life for the future. The last thing I'll leave you with is something that I also believe we need to do more of, is I work for every one of you. It's great when people meet the governor. Quite often they get excited, even if they don't like me, but hey, it's a governor. It's kind of cool. So they'll come up and be all excited, and what they don't recognize is I work for you. And so I'm there to serve you. And that was a message that Detroit may not fully realize, But from 2009, when I started running for office, I made Detroit a core because it had been too many generations that people looked and said, there's Michigan and then there's Detroit. It's Detroit, Michigan. And I was going to represent every person in Detroit, whether they knew it or not, or whether they always liked it or not. You deserved having representation in Lansing from your governor. So the part I would share with you of that, though, is I also have always viewed, I don't work just for you. But I work for those future Michiganders that haven't even been born yet. Those young people, it's great to meet the young people. They're already here today, but they're kids. So when I make decisions, I've tried to do it in the context of looking out 40 and 50 years. And isn't that the best way to do things? Because the question I would give you, is it right to say we do things today where we put them in debt, or we make their life worse off because we want to be better today? Look at our national government. Do you know of anyone that can say they haven't seen that happen at the national government? In terms of, let's look good today because we don't really think about or worry about the future. I can tell you in Michigan that you can go to Pride, with great pride, to anyone in the rest of this country. As a citizen of Michigan, you can look them straight in the eye and say, not only are we better off today than 2010, but those unborn kids, those future generations, are better off in Michigan than they were in 2010. That's a cool answer. So let's keep that up too. So just two simple messages. They're not easy, but relentless positive action. Let's act like a family. Let's keep civility. Let's be the role model for civility. And then secondly, let's help one another like we're one big family and recognize that it's not just about us, but those people that are coming in the future. And we have an obligation, we have an opportunity to make their lives better at the same time. There doesn't need to be a loser. Shouldn't we all win together? So thank you for the opportunity. It's truly been an honor being your governor. Has it been an easy job? No, some days. But it's been an honor to serve, and that's the way I looked at it, in a simple sense. This was a chance to give back to a family of 10 million I care about. So thanks for that. Jerry, come on up, but thank you so much. I look forward to the questions. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's great.
So this was billed as an exit interview, but it didn't sound like one, did it? That had to be, well, I was going to say as much passion. That was more passion than I think I've ever heard you speak with before, which says a lot. I was also glad to read, I was reading something this morning about you talking about not coasting out, that you're running to the tape to add to the long list of accomplishments. Do you have that with you, by the way?
Oh, the long list, yes. So I got to stand up, though. That's the good part. So we're working on the last version of this. And we are running through the tape. The funny part is, and a number of my team are here, I don't know if they'll think this is humorous, but I told them we have roughly one dog year left. So there are 50-some days or so, and we have 37 projects. And I said, by the way, guys, I can add a few more, and we can make this like an advent calendar.
Sounds good. Yeah. Well, I am glad to hear that you're going to use the last days to create a legacy that's even deeper. It's great for the state. But I'll cast back to where I started, which is the time you entered. You know, the state was bottoming out. It's been a critical 8-year period, first of recovery and then of flourishing. And so when you look back on that, and what's changed in our state, what strikes you as either the most significant and important changes or what's changed most fundamentally?
Yeah, it's interesting. Two or three things I would share with you. One is from an economic point of view. When I became governor, the question is, where is there a job in Michigan? We didn't have jobs. Mm-hmm. Now the question has changed to say, how do I get the skills, how do I get the training to take that good, well-paying job that's out there today. And so we've made a massive transformation in how we're approaching it. And this is where I talk about talent. We just did the Marshall Plan for Talent, which is a 5-year, $100 million investment to dramatically ramp up our skilled trades, our certificate programs, things in information technology and health sciences. And it's all about collaboration to understand we need to break down these traditional silos of education versus employers, and we need them all to marry together and understand it's, first of all, to help the people coming out of school as they go through that process to get their first career or people needing that career. But secondly, lifelong learning is going to be a gigantic issue in the future because there are very few positions being created in the future that aren't going to require you to sort of be retrained as you go through the 20 and 30 years of your career. And our country and the world is woefully unprepared for that. Mm-hmm. And I can say right now, we're putting the foundation in place to lead the world in that. So that's really cool. The other one is Detroit's come back. I mean, this is absolutely incredible to see the stuff going on, the projects going on, everything from the Gordie Howe Bridge to the new buildings going up to some of the good things in the neighborhoods. Because again, I'd always emphasize, this is about helping all of Detroit come back and helping it. I just spent a day in Pontiac. They had me come up, and it was wonderful to see the things in Pontiac going on. But also, say, don't overlook the smaller communities in Michigan. We've had a program for 2 or 3 years now to do it on a smaller scale, but to go help Charlotte, to go help River Rouge, to go help these smaller communities. And that, as a governor, has been one of my all-time favorite programs, because I go do a listening session to kick it off. And one of the things, this is a lesson we all need to learn. I was in one of these communities, and we had about 40 people there from all cross sections of the community, and a hand went up, and it was a woman that was a pastor. And she made the comment, she goes, "I've been in this community my entire life." And she goes, "This is the first time in my life where I've seen all the right people in the room together." She just answered the question why they had struggles in their community. And she just answered the question why there's great hope to say now's the breakthrough moment to do it. Because until you fundamentally decide you're in it together, you're a family, you're going to work together, you can have as many great programs. I told them, the state can show up with wonderful things, but if you're not working together to decide you're going to do it together, we're wasting our time.
Yep.
So that's a huge thing that we need to work on. And then just the long term, that thing I emphasized to you, that one concern I do have about where we're at is, as we've come back now, people are starting to get more complacent, to sort of assume good times just are a given. Or I'm now seeing sort of special interests now say, well, I helped everyone do it together, now what's in it for me? And I appreciate people, it's always fair to ask, but let's always ask the question, how do we win together?
Yeah.
How do you avoid that win-lose? So those are the great things that are really out there that I'm really proud of we made this transition on. But as you transition, you run into new issues. So that's the thing. Never assume you got it all answered. Just ask the question of what's the next series of problems or challenges you need to overcome. But just have the attitude to say, we're going to do it.
I think that's a great part of the challenge. Complacency is always a precursor of things that aren't good. So
well, you said it. It's like how many people just remember it was only 4 or 5 years ago where we were with the city. It's absolutely incredible what's
and
going on.
It can turn as fast as it improves. The other way, yeah. So that's our job. So look, that was you described some of the important changes. You showed us a long list of accomplishments, and those accomplishments range in size, I'm sure. But if you had to pick one off that perhaps was a singular accomplishment that you're proudest of, is there one?
One relentless positive action is the broad one about us all working together, the economy taking off, states growing, our young people staying here is something that I come back first and foremost, that now they can have a career here, they can have a life here, but we need to keep working it. The other one is Detroit. I mean, it is absolutely incredible, and you can't believe the positive power now that brings as I travel the world and talk about where this, you know, the state's at and such. Detroit is what people look to when they think of Michigan. The other one is how the rest of the state now engages with the state, with Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was this sort of divide, and it was terrible. One story is when I was campaigning in 2009, I always took questions from people, and the question went up, and this is in West Michigan, and the person asked the question, Are you going to cede Detroit from the state of Michigan? And a lot of people laughed and they started clapping. And I said, I respectfully disagree with you. That's the opposite of what I'm going to try to do and what I believe. And so I went up to him afterward to say, why did you ask that question? What drove you to ask that question? And their answer was, is they just thought it'd be humorous. They didn't understand what the question meant. It was just part of the culture that you could sort of make that joke or you could make jokes or comments like that. And they didn't even think they were talking about
the people in Detroit. Yeah.
And to be open with you, there were challenges within Detroit going the other way, Detroit versus everyone. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, can't we all, you should be really proud you're from Detroit, but can't we stop this thing to say we're all in this together? And what we've seen is now I got people in the UP rooting for Detroit. Isn't that cool? I mean, because they see the value and they see good things going on. And we need that same spirit here in Detroit of saying it's great if something happens in the Upper Peninsula or some other part of Michigan, because we all win.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mentioned that Detroit emerged 4 years ago, relatively recently. But I also know there were years of hard work behind the scenes to enable that. And you were in the middle of that. So as you look back on that, do you remember sort of singular moments or singular decisions that were critical to all of that coming together?
Yeah, I mean, from day one, many people don't know, I spent 2 or 3 days a week working in the Detroit office here. I did that for 2 or 3 years, spending that amount of time trying to go through the issues. And people talk about the bankruptcy, but people don't understand how hard we work not to get to bankruptcy and how I tried to partner with the city and how we went through a whole process of consent agreements. And again, emergency manager was this huge lightning rod, and I supported the law, but it wasn't a subjective thing to say you're picking on any one place. If you do these things or don't do these things, this is what happens.
Yeah.
And the question is those things didn't all happen, so we had to keep going down that path. So one of the greatest things we did was getting Kevin Orr on board. I mean, that was one of the huge things. The grand bargain was a huge thing, and I thank Jerry Rosen and the mediators for all that great work. We got the right judge. Judge Rhodes was fabulous. But one of the things I will never forget is it was a press conference at Wayne State after we sort of did the legal filing, but I got up in front of the entire state to say I put the city of Detroit in bankruptcy. And the statement I made that I thought about, and I firmly believe that day is the history books will be written that Rick Snyder was governor at the lowest point in the history of Detroit. Bankruptcy. And I said, I don't look upon that as a bad answer because the reason I needed to do it that day was if I didn't stand up and make that decision, and to be blunt, there weren't a lot of people standing with me, the day after would be worse, the day after that would be even worse, the day after that would be even worse, and enough was enough. And people think the bankruptcy was about money. It was not about the money. The money was something that had to be addressed as part of it, the liabilities, but it was about, if you look and step back at what bankruptcy is for a municipality, not a private company, it's about providing citizens to the citizens the services they deserve in their community. So for me, it was never about liabilities and just assets and liabilities. It was about the people of Detroit deserve police protection, they deserve lights being on, trash being picked up, and that needed to get done.
Well, you know, leadership always has these critical moments of courage that aren't easy, and that was one of them, certainly. That, like you said, there were a lot of people not standing with you, but you look back now, 4 years later after you made that, it's been longer than four since we entered bankruptcy, but just incredible what's come in the wake, and I think it vindicates the path that we traveled. So thank you for that.
Well, that was teamwork, though, too. I mean, that was a fabulous group of people doing work together, and we came together.
Yeah, no, that's true. So look, it's a long list of accomplishments, but nobody accomplishes everything that they wish they could have. So are there one or two things that you came in thinking, I hope to get done, that aren't on your list?
Yeah, there are a couple. In terms of bigger ones that is in public view that I wish we would have gotten done, and I learned a lot of lessons, I'd be happy to share some of the challenges, would be no-fault reform. Our insurance premiums are too high in the state, and that needs to get solved. So that's a top issue that should be there. And to be open with you, when people look at it, I describe it not as a partisan issue as much. It's not an R&D issue as much to me as it's about different interests not coming to the table to compromise.
So we've got, just following up on No Fault, we got a Democratic governor and legislature that's narrower in the House, but still Republican in both chambers. Yeah. Is that an issue you think they can work in a bipartisan way?
I think they could. One of the things I would recommend to our new governor, and I congratulate her, and to the majorities in the House and the Senate, they are Republicans, so we do have divided government, is learn a lesson from watching what didn't happen in Washington this last time, look at relentless positive action, and start by finding two or three of these common ground issues that you can show success on. Try to avoid the polarization at the start. There will obviously be disagreement points on particular issues, but try to get some wins underneath your belt.
Well, that was actually my next question, which is, do you have any incoming advice for our new governor? I think you just gave it. But if she were to pick a few of those things that could be worked jointly, or what comes to mind for you?
Well, No Fault could be one of those. Again, that is a very challenging topic. So again, that's where it's important to sit down with the legislative leaders and start that discussion early. But other things, I talk about talent, about helping do programs like the Marshall Plan and doing all those kind of things and supporting education. These are things, this is motherhood and apple pie stuff. I mean, this is just good, smart stuff. Economic development work, how to continue to do jobs. Hmm. So again, if you look at both parties, they tend to have sets of social issues where there's polar disagreement. Don't start with those from either side. Try to say, what are some of these common ground ones that really mean the most to people's lives in many respects? About, is there a job opportunity? Is there training to get a career? Or is your kid doing better in school? All those kind of questions, in addition to helping bring down costs that are affecting not just Detroit, but too high insurance premiums everywhere. Let's improve that.
Yeah, no, those make sense. I hope No Fault is one of those, but job training development makes a lot of sense and ought to be bipartisan.
Yeah.
Ought to find a way to make it bipartisan. So, if you were to go from what's maybe most doable on a bipartisan basis to what's the most important remaining challenge that remains on Michigan's plate, do you have any thoughts there?
Well, it's just getting people career connected. To give you an idea, it's really, if you look at the number today, so we had over 11% unemployment, 11.2 when I took office, and we actually started a website to aggregate openings. And when we had over 11% unemployment, it said we got 80,000 unfilled jobs. So we have 4% unemployment today. If you go to the same website, mitalent.org, and you pull up that website, it'll show 115,000 openings. So we actually, and that number's understated by tens of thousands to potentially another 100,000 jobs because people aren't even bothering to post right now. Or they'd hire two or three where they'll post one. So literally, there are all these jobs, but in many cases, when you talk about these jobs, in about 40 different job categories, these jobs pay on average 60% higher than the average Michigan pay. Let's get people connected. Yeah. And that's ramping up these certificate programs. And ramping up programs, again, we have these too many silos, and we have great institutions. So again, I don't want anyone sitting out there, if you're with a university, community college, or K-12, to look at it as a negative, or if you're an employer. But we need to blur those lines, because in the end, do we care who does it versus we all did it together to help someone get a degree in whatever combination they could get it or their certificate, and then go back to school and get a degree if you want one later. But get some credential that gets you into one of those great paying jobs and your life is good.
Yep. Well, I was encouraged meeting with students earlier today. Sometimes these soundings you get when you interact with people are indications of change. The students, I asked, what are you gonna do, senior? He said, I'm going to go to Albion College, but I'm also going to go to a community college and get a skilled trades training so I can put together skills with my hands and skills with my head. Yeah. Someday I'll transition from working with my hands to a business, founding a business based on that.
That's
and
cool.
There's somebody who's put a lot of pieces together and is blurring the boundaries, and it sounds like an awfully smart plan for somebody coming out of high school. Well, let me shift gears. So you talked about partisanship, and I know one of your hallmarks was to try to set that aside as leader of Michigan, but we see it in such a pronounced way at the federal level. There's lots of opinions about why. Do you have any thoughts on what root causes for this intense partisanship that we see are?
Yeah, I think I don't have the answer to that, but I think there are two or three things that are clearly significant elements in what's causing that. One is, and this is a assumption I make in all my decision making. I have two. One is globalization is going to continue, but the second one is the velocity of change in our world is only going faster and faster. And if you look at the rate of change and how things are being thrown at us as humans, we're having an awful time adapting because humans are not made necessarily. This is what technology, all this stuff's throwing at us. And that ties into one of the other variables that go with this is, one, we're being asked to look at issues or the speed of an issue coming up or what can happen overnight, where in the old days things might calm down a little bit or people would reflect on it. There's not a lot of reflection left. It's that visceral reaction to say, I'm going to go yell at somebody. Have you ever seen that being a good starting point? If you really think about it, it's not. And the other problem that helps reinforce that, and again, I respect the media. There's some great media people here that they have a role to play. But part of it is there's so many media outlets. And people, and this is a people issue, not a media issue. People tend to go watch the media that reinforces what they already believe rather than getting a different perspective or a different opinion. I thought it was, I actually, in some ways, like the old days where you had the three networks and they sort of had to go down the middle versus saying, you know, you can turn on one side or the other and you pretty much know. And in a lot of cases, they don't even represent, they're really reporters anymore, but you have lost paying attention to who's a reporter versus who's a commentator. So that's part of it. The other thing that we need to do a better job, and this is a true issue in our society, is we've made this huge comeback in Michigan, but not everyone has participated. And there are people feeling left out. There are people in the neighborhoods of Detroit and some of our urban areas that feel left out. And to be open, we've reached hard to try to get them. Did I get as far as I wanted? No. But we've done some cool things, community ventures, some other wonderful programs to help people in that capacity. But what part of the Trump effect that people didn't recognize is there are people that are just as much feeling left out that aren't in our urban areas, that are in our smaller communities, our rural areas, and all those kind of places too. Yep. So there are people left out across the board that we do need to be more proactive to say, we hear you, whether you're in a big city or you're out in the woods, essentially. And how do we help bring you up? How do we understand that if we're doing better, don't we have a responsibility? We can't make you do it. You have to solve your own issue, but can't we give you the tools
to help you make that happen?
Yeah, to make that happen. And that's like Project Rising Tide as much as we did in Detroit. We're doing it with communities, but we need to make it more personal. It needs to come down to people helping people.
That makes a lot of sense to me. One more question from me before I do maybe a couple from that were texted in. What are your thoughts about how you're going to spend your time moving forward?
That's easy. Whatever Sue says, my wife. To the degree
anything yet?
Well, to the degree I got great applause, she deserves it because she's put up with all this, all right, my family. So, thank you. So the funny part I would add is, and I don't know if my office team and everyone else has started the pool yet. So I am going to spend some vacation time. I've made it clear I'm not making decisions on anything until I'm done to sort of force me to take a little time. But then it's clear she's going to throw me out at some point because I'll drive her nuts. You know my personality profile, and it's like I was telling her how I'd be home for breakfast, I'd make her breakfast, then we could go to lunch, and in the afternoon we could talk about where we're going to dinner, and then I could have a nice evening with her, and she goes, whoa.
Sounds awful, yeah.
It was like, get out.
Right. Well... We'll wait to see that. So here's an interesting one that was texted in from the audience, I think, is what did you learn about the people of Michigan during your time as governor?
There are great people everywhere. And there's a reason people live where they do. And this is where I'd encourage people, wherever you live, go explore more in Michigan. Go talk to those folk. And again, that gets back to that point about recognizing people feel left out in other places. But go explore. I mean, until I was governor, I grew up most of my life in the state. I didn't know Michigan.
Yeah.
I've been to all 83 counties multiple times. I'm a great trivia person. If you want to know where to get this giant ice cream cone, I can tell you. there are wonderful things going on. And when you sit down and talk with people, and that's something we learned from the Grand Bargain. And that was a case, I mentioned the UP a couple times with Detroit, but we had UP people sitting down with Detroit people. And those are fairly different positions to start from, but they were finding things that they had in common.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's something that's really important. The other thing that I appreciate that applies is public service and the public servants, the people in state government. I've got 47,000 people, roughly, that work in state government, and the same's true for most of our municipalities, our local people, and our all the nonprofit people, our universities and school people. They're hardworking people. They're meaning to do well. The question is, quite often, they're caught in an environment where they don't have the tools to do the innovation and the things they really want to do. One of the things I'm really proud of, and you'll hear more about this hopefully, is we've done 5 employee surveys in the time I've been governor of Michigan for our workforce, our people, our team. And it's dramatic. We've been able to make a huge increase in the number of champions, people that are fired up to work for state government. Literally, that number's changed by thousands in the last 5 years because we went out and said, can you help us be better?
So, Governor, here's another that was texted in, and you know, we've talked about divisions and differences in perspective. Immigration's a hot topic. It's a divisive topic, but it's actually an area that you in the past have talked about Michigan being a welcoming place for immigrants. And the question was, do you think Michigan should consider bringing in more refugees that are seeking a better life for themselves and their families? What are your thoughts on that whole area?
Yeah, my personal view is absolutely. I mean, I've been there the whole time, and I'm going to go out the door saying I think I'm probably the most pro-immigration governor in the country. It's the Statue of Liberty play, folks. How many people here are not from immigrants?
Zero, yeah.
So the question is we need to have legal immigration. We need to protect our borders. We need to do this in a much more thoughtful way, in a humane way, because it's not coming at our expense if we did it right. The power of immigration is incredible. And one thing I'm proud of, because again, I'm not there to get in an argument with the president or anyone else about this, but one of the things I was proud of, we created the Office for New Americans. So just 2 or 3 months ago, and we did it for the second time. We had a banquet to give out awards to immigrants and you know, descendants of immigrants that have shown they've created lots of jobs or done great community service in our state. And how often do you hear the positive immigrant story now about the positive power? So this is something that, again, instead of making a lightning rod where people are calling each other's names, let's get down to saying we want to grow Michigan faster. If you look at our population today, shouldn't we be a place where we want more people in Michigan? Wouldn't it be good to have more Michiganders? Again, that creates jobs. It creates opportunity. We just have to do it in a way where we're saying that immigrants not getting it at the expense of a Michigander, but by having the immigrant, the Michigander's got a better chance of having an even better job. So instead of making a polarizing question, change the question so it's a win for everyone versus a win-lose question.
Well, Governor, that answer is very much in keeping with your spirit as a leader, so maybe it's a good place for us to stop. We have a tradition here he's holding up the 2-minute card at me, and we have a tradition of finishing so that everybody can get on to what they need to on time. But I just want to say, good luck on your one dog year remaining. We hope you do. We hope you do some really great things for the state in your remaining time left. But I also want to say that we all, in fact, owe you a deep debt of gratitude for the work you've done over 8 years. I know at many times it was not easy, required courage and true leadership, and you provided that, and we thank you for that. So,
thank you.
DEC, for your remarks, and on behalf of the DEC, thank you for being such an advocate for the state of Michigan and for giving up so much of your time over 8 years away from your family. So thank you. One more round of applause. And Jerry Ensign, great job as moderating. Thanks for all you do for the DEC. Thank you again for coming, ladies and gentlemen. On time, every time. This meeting is now adjourned. Thank you.